On FM, digital and your mobile. Cambridge 105 Radio.
What's it like? Condicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, and thanks to Ollie Slack for part one of today's football. Jack Swindlehurst will be here at five with the results. But for now, Dr. Sue Bailey, Carrie Pavitt and myself, Matt Bentman, are here with an hour of food and drink, and here is the rundown of what's coming up.
We bring you an expert guide to Chinese food as we visit 7 days in Regent Street with new Flavour recruit Ling Yu Wu. Alice Archer gives us tips on Greek wine.
And I catch up with Cambridge food hero Jo Kuczynska to find out how she's getting on since she closed Afternoon Tea's cafe on King Street a year ago.
Alan Alder, who is away today but will be back next time, visits the Hungarian hot food stall on Cambridge Market. And our Cambridge chefs have some ideas for chestnuts, which is our food of the fortnight.
We'll also be keeping up to date with what's on Twitter and seeing if there's any free food available today via the Olio app too.
Now, China is big.
How big is it?
It's so big, you can fit the UK into China about 39 times. It's got 8 varied cuisines according to region and climate. Possibly the most well-known amongst the West is Guangdong or Cantonese cuisine. Now, I know next to nothing about Chinese food, but a lady called Ling Yu recently joined our station and we enlisted her help to make the following piece. We've just been to the 7 days Chinese restaurant on Regent Street. I'm here with Ling Yu Wu. Ling Yu, you are one of the latest people to join Cambridge 105 Radio. We chose, or rather you chose, 7 days because this is one of your favourite Chinese restaurants in the city.
Yes, not only because the food is tasty, but also it has a lot of my good memories. Important moment of my life, I celebrated with my friends there, so it has different meanings to me. And of course, the food are always lovely, never let me disappoint it. Almost all Chinese food in Cambridge, I'm not talking about takeaway, I'm talking about restaurant, are selling authentic Chinese food. And I think this is great because I almost never homesick if I miss hometown food. And of course, 7 days is just one of many brilliant Chinese restaurants in Cambridge. And the food there are really authentic and the cook from China. 7 days is covered most commonly ordered food by Chinese, as well as, you know, some welcomed food by Westerners, such as Stephen Hawking's potato.
你还记得吗? Ling Yu approves of 7 days, and so did Stephen Hawking.
The first thing I noticed on the menu was the Stephen Hawking spicy potato dish.
Here's Jason Wong, a business partner in the 7 days restaurant.
Yes, he's ordered that dish countless times, one of his favourites.
And his taste clearly is heavy on the spice, because that was a seriously spicy dish, wasn't it?
Well, at the beginning I did feel, even to me, I felt a bit spicy, but later on I just feel like, well, yum, yum, yum. That's the only feeling. I forgot about the spice. And it's also a place favoured by students. Lots of students celebrate their birthday, you know, New Year's, and all sorts of important dates for them, which is another reason I like about the specific restaurant.
7 days has been here for many, many years.
Yes. Ever since I moved to Cambridge, I have really strong memories with 7 days. And then I moved to Cambridge since 2013. It must have been longer than 5 years. So I'm pretty happy about going there again. And today I was there with the presenter Matt, and it just gave me a chance to build another of my good memories.
The food that we ordered, so we did have Stephen Hawking's potatoes.
Yes.
Incredibly spicy. I don't know how he managed those things, but very, very nice. But I was especially taken, and I've never tried anything like this. Fried fish in sweet and sour sauce. So delicate, so light, so fluffy.
Yes, original version is with sour pork, and actually from my hometown province, northeast of China. And this is, I guess, it's just a tailored version, but actually it's one of my favorites because of the fish is so soft and tender, covered by the sweet and sour sauce. Just taste it like heaven.
假如我不曾爱你. Prior to meeting you today, I tried to look up what I could about Chinese cuisine. And Chinese cuisine is thousands of years old, of course, but it's also very, very regional and specific. I think there's eight regions in terms of their cuisine, and when you told me that the 7 Days restaurant has an ability to cater to all of them, I wondered, is that simply a case of stretching too far, or is it a shadow of what you would really get if you were to eat the same foods in China? But you're very confident, and you said that their food is actually very authentic and nice.
Yes, I mean, I almost taste every of the dish because I've been here for long enough to try almost everyone. And I love spicy food, originally from Sichuan province to northeast food. We've tried today sweets and sour fish, to other dishes from probably Shanghai region, and it all tastes very authentic and lovely.
怎么去拥有一道彩虹?
Ling Yu's going to reel off some of the dishes that you can find on the 7 Days menu.
Squirrel-shaped mandarin fish with sweet and sour sauce. Braised hot spicy pork belly, Chairman Mao style. This is also one of most Chinese men's favorite.
Is it?
It's just so tasty and so tender, and it's like, yeah, if I'm going out with a Chinese Western man friend, and yeah, he would probably order this. Pork kidney in spring onion and ginger sauce. Frog leg with chili in pepper sauce.
Frog's legs?
I actually had a lot when I was younger, because yeah, we had the belief of eating frog oil can help you heal some parts of your body. I remember mom bought a lot of dried frog oil and then put them into the warm water, and then they expand, and I just drink the oil with warm water. And it's very expensive too, because you can imagine the quantity of that from a tiny frog. Yeah, tasty food.
I guess the description of the oil is a little bit more squeamish than the reality. It's just oil, right?
It's not melting your mouth oil. It's sort of like a jelly, if you ask me to describe the texture. Toffee sweet potato.
That sounds gorgeous. Toffee sweet potato.
This is, you know, we Chinese don't follow like starter, main, as well as dessert. We don't have like many courses, but this is also something we could reckon as the dessert. So if we go out in the West with friends from different places, then we order this as a dessert because it's sweet. So it's sort of after the main dishes, we order this and separate them and just eat it. It's absolutely tasty. So my personal favorite is definitely 7 Days, and I would say it's a must go place. If you ask me, memories, happy memories associated with the food and the music. It's just very modernized, and I actually explained to Matt, it's really one of my favorite music as a background, and when I was eating food, I just feel happy. Of course, don't forget Qingdao beer. It's one of my favorite beer from China. You can also buy it from any major high street supermarket. It's the flavor of China. It perfectly goes well with Chinese food. So you might want to try the beer.
In the last couple of months, 7 Days Restaurant has opened a second branch. Here's Jason again. One of the things you were telling me just now, the distinction between 7 Days on Regent Street and your new site on Newmarket Road, they tend to offer perhaps two different things.
Yeah, the one on Regent Street is more North cuisine and Sichuan, but we do have a bit of Cantonese style for the British-based customers because they might not be used to the spiciness that Sichuan style cooked. It's more of a peppercorn, numb style cooking rather than just a spicy style. Yeah. Basically, the one on 70 Newmarket Road is a bit of everything for people who are used to the Hong Kong style and customers who prefer the North China and Sichuan style.
That site is also called 7 Days?
Also called 7 Days, yeah. Also, our other branch, 70 Newmarket Road, also have KTV rooms upstairs for private use or, you know, a bit of karaoke fun. They have projector screens, speakers, mic for all company events, have 5 KTV rooms, so we're quite equipped for private functions.
What is a KTV room?
as in karaoke, it's singing. We in China, we call it KTV.
This is absolutely one of Chinese favorites. Just enjoy the moment and sing out with friends, colleagues. Not only Chinese songs, but also English versions, the latest ones. It's a good place for people who is passionate about singing and food. So definitely have a try.
Recently, Jimmy Choo hired the whole restaurant for his private function for 3 days. So we were quite equipped to manage a big event like that.
Well, Jason Wong, thank you very much for inviting us down to 7 days. It's been a really wonderful afternoon. And we are here on 66 Regent Street, and you are listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yeah, many thanks to Jason Wong of 7 Days Chinese Restaurant on 66 Regent Street. And of course to Ling Yu Wu for making her first radio feature on her favourite Chinese in Cambridge. Ling Yu, like the rest of us here, is a volunteer. We all enjoy learning and making radio programmes that involve the community. And you can join us too, whether in front of the microphone or working behind the scenes. It's all good fun and you get to meet so many interesting people. If you like the sound of that, do check out the volunteer page on the Cambridge 105 Radio website.
On now to the food of the fortnight, and it's chestnuts. Here's Flavour's Liz Budd with some background information.
Edible chestnuts are the fruit of the sweet chestnut tree. They're not related to the horse chestnut or conker, which is mildly poisonous, nor to the water chestnut. By far the biggest producer of edible chestnuts in the world is China. In Europe, Italy, Greece, Portugal and Spain are the biggest producers. Nutritionally, they contain much less protein and much less fat than most nuts and are higher in carbohydrates. They contain no gluten. Chestnuts can be dried and milled into flour, which can be used to make bread, cakes and even pasta. In some parts of Italy, a cake made from chestnuts is used as a substitute for potatoes. In Modena, also in Italy, they are soaked in wine before roasting. In France, the marron glacé is a candied chestnut served at Christmas and New Year.
So, now on to the first of our chefs with ideas about using chestnuts. It's Teen Roche from Cambridge Cookery and Bistro, and like me, she particularly likes them with Brussels sprouts.
And I am a lover of Brussels sprouts. You know, that's a sort of you love it or hate it, don't you, food. I think some people just have awful memories of unspeakable school dinners. I love them, but I think the trick is with any cabbage, any brassica, is you mustn't cook it very much because that's when it starts to smell in a certain way, wet wool sort of thing. And also it needs to have a lovely crunch and retain its lovely green colour. And that's just something for me to combine. That lovely, sort of slightly bitter acidic flavour of not overcooked, bright green little Brussels sprouts. They're wonderful in themselves, I think, and they need a fat, so goose fat or a bit of butter to just coat them. Pancetta, you can use the cooking fat from that, of course, and then chestnuts. And they're their own little beautiful sort of mahogany orbs, so it's just the look of it as well, you know, the green orbs, the brown orbs. There's just something beautiful about it, and yeah, they're just lovely. So I think as a contrast food, because as you know, the French are very, very keen on using them for sweetmeats, but it's very, very sweet. So I think pairing it in savoury cooking, it's just delicious.
So do you use the chestnuts raw?
No, they would be cooked and vacuum packed usually by that stage. Obviously, you know, we're into winter now, aren't we? November, December food. So they're perfect. You can just buy a very nice vacuum packed pack. But of course, it's lovely just to chuck them on hot coals as well, and that smell. Wet autumn leaves and roasting chestnuts, my goodness.
That was Teen Roche, and more fantastic ideas from our team of chefs in a few minutes.
Now, I think most listeners will probably be aware of the old grey whistle test and Whispering Bob Harris. And it just so turns out that we have our own Whispering Carrie Pavitt, taking us into this next feature about Joe Kraczynska, formerly of Afternoon Tea's Cafe on King Street. Nice.
Good morning. to a very quiet autumnal Sunday morning by Ely Riverside. I've just travelled up by train to see Joe Kaczynska, the former owner of the Afternoon Teas Cafe on King Street, which closed almost a year ago today. And I've come to catch up with Joe and find out what she's been up to a year on.
Oh, hi.
Good morning. How are you doing?
How are you doing?
Oh, nice and warm in here. So you closed the cafe after 4 years on King Street.
Yeah.
What was that last day like?
It still plays out in my head quite clearly. At 8:55, a queue started forming and went all the way down to the corner of the brew house.
There was a lot of brunches served that day.
Well, way over 200, more than we'd ever done. The cafe exceeded my expectations. I put everything into it for 4 years, and I think it got to a point where I realised that I couldn't keep it up. I also wasn't really interested in stepping back from the business, and I didn't want to hand over to someone else.
So it's almost a year since you closed Afternoon Teas, and you put out a tweet on the day of the anniversary.
Yeah.
And you've still got an amazing response. How did that feel?
Yeah, really good. It feels good that it's not been forgotten.
Do people still ask you for any of your cakes?
Oh, yeah. It's funny, because I've been doing cake orders. But if I put a tweet out saying, oh, this one's going out for an outside order, people go, oh my God, I didn't realise we could still get cakes from you. It's just really nice. It's usually birthdays or someone wants their favourite cake that they used to eat in the cafe. It's usually the chocolate Guinness cake. That's still the favourite. So I'm in Ely now. I've done quite a few clandestine cake drops on the train platform.
How's life different from being in Cambridge?
I miss Cambridge. But Ely's wonderful. Ely's really, it's a really lovely place. And there's a lot of independent stuff going on here. But as I say, people will travel for cake. So it's lovely to be here as well. And there's a whole new town to rediscover. So yeah, it's good.
Get a good pint anywhere?
Oh yeah, like so the Dream and Sun. It's a really great little craft beer pub, actually owned by the Three Blind Mice Brewery. Well, they've just taken it over recently. That's great. And there's a little place called Three at Three, which does amazing craft beer, but also is a cafe during the day. And Samovar Tea House is a great place for tea, I just remembered, and one of my favourites for coffee.
What kind of things are you doing these days? Your name does keep appearing in social media. You've been doing Sweet Easies again, I hear.
Yeah, I used to do Sweet Easy before I opened the cafe. It was slightly different. It was cake-inspired cocktails and cocktail-inspired cakes. Recently, I joined forces with Cambridge Gin Distillery. They took on the cocktail side of things, and I was doing the cakes, and it was a match made in heaven.
What's been your favourite combination, gin and cake?
So in the first one we did, I did a Polish cheesecake. So it's quite a savoury sweet made with curd cheese. And they paired it with their truffle gin, which was awesome.
Oh, it sounds
with
good.
Some Frangelico in, which is hazelnut liqueur. Amazing.
God, Allah, Buddha, bless Mill Road. Mill Road is awesome.
God, I miss Mill Road. Like for sourcing ingredients, there's not really the range of shops in Ely for that. But then Cambridge is only 15 minutes on the train, and then you've got Mill Road at your fingertips.
What other events have you been doing? You've been popping up all over the place.
That's one of the beauties of not running the cafe, is being able to source amazing places to hold things and have different ideas and not just do cakes all the time, not just do brunch all the time, but do a wide range of events. So recently I did Brunch Club with My Little Festival, and we held that at Manor Farm in Bourne. So we did three-course brunch for 130 people with live music and wreath making, and it was a beautiful sunny day and coffee from the Rural Coffee Project. Crazy busy, but amazing good fun.
So that was My Little Festival. That's Alex and Vicky?
Yeah, they're doing some exciting events at the moment as well.
And didn't I see you and Ivana were back together?
Oh, yeah. It started off as Plate Lickers Anonymous back in 2012, I believe. And we used to just pop up at different venues. We didn't tell people where until the day before. We would sell tickets without putting a menu out. So secret menu, secret venue. People trusted us. They always had a theme. We did Eastern European Christmas, both being our roots coming from Eastern Europe. School dinners, Middle Eastern theme as well. We had a lot of fun with it. So this time we popped up at Paws, which is
what's Paws?
Paws is an outdoor relaxation venue where they have wood-fired hot tubs, a wood-fired sauna, a beautiful cafe that they've set up there that I've been actually helping them with as well. It's an absolutely beautiful venue. Their attention to detail is insane, and it's such a relaxing place. It's on the top of a hill in a meadow in Bourne, outside of Cambridge. Yeah, they've done a great job at creating an immensely relaxing environment.
So was it great to do a pop-up again with Ivana?
It was really good fun. We've both come on such a long way since we did the initial plate lickers. Well, me in the cafe and her as a chef for 4 years. To have all of that experience and then come back together again was a real treat.
So you sound busy. You set up your kitchen in Ely so you can in production?
Yeah, fully registered. Got my 5 stars, which is lovely. It means that I have a lot of time here to try new things. So yeah, I just did some corporate catering with Paws. It was really nice to be able to produce food for a big group of people, but kind of big sharing tables of lovely salads and stews. Oh no, I did a chili. It was delicious. And soups and cheese scones. Oh, cheese scones came out. I haven't made cheese scones since I closed the cafe, Graham.
Are you going to whet people's appetites and actually let them have some?
Yes, that brings us very nicely onto the fact that Cheese Scone Thursday is going to come back on the 20th of December. So from the 20th to the 22nd, Enchanted Cinema are popping up at the Guildhall in the middle of town, and they're going to be doing 3 showings a day of some amazing Christmas films. All the classics, and I believe The Greatest Showman, which isn't a Christmas film, but is definitely a classic. And they're going to have a Christmas market in the smaller of the Guildhall halls. I'm going to be there every day from 10 until 7, selling cakes and fresh cheese scones every day. I'm going to be a very busy girl.
Do you need to have bought a ticket for the cinema to get to the cheese scones?
No, I believe there are still some tickets remaining, but they're selling pretty quick. But the Christmas market is available for everyone. You don't have to have bought a ticket. You don't need to be going to the cinema to visit the market. So you can just pop in, come and buy cake and go into the cinema with it, which is better than any cinema food that I know of. Well, what I've really been enjoying is kind of working with other food providers. I'm going to be working at Alex Rushmer's pop-up at Cambridge Distillery. He's doing another botanicals-inspired menu. And I've been doing a bit of work with some of the food trucks. So Azahar, the Spanish food truck. Guillermo does some amazing things with his bocatas. I've been helping Guerrilla Kitchen out as well.
Oh, their steam buns.
Oh, amazing, yeah. I've got a bit of an addiction to
those. When you were at the cafe, it was full-time. Rarely got a day off, because if you weren't in the cafe, you were doing the admin.
Yeah.
So you've also got more time to yourself now.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So nice. I mean, I do just do a lot of eating. I went to Tucasa Tapas Bar, the new, well, fairly new Tapas Bar
on Mill Road. Yeah.
Really good. I felt very authentically Spanish. And, oh God, the one that jumps to mind straight away, Restaurant 22. I just need more excuses to go back there. I've been there twice now. It blows me away. Service, the overall experience. They're doing something extremely right.
And have you tried any new recipes yourself? Obviously, you've got a bit more time to kind of sort of experiment.
Yeah, I've been doing quite a lot of cooking. I think that's the thing, that when I had the cafe, my personal cooking just fell by the wayside. The thought of cooking after a 13-hour shift, knowing that I was going to do the same the next day, wasn't of interest. I lost my passion for it. So it's really nice to have friends over and cook for people, try new things, and, you know, have time to look through magazines and get inspiration.
And that sounds like it's informing the kind of the different jobs, like the consultancy and the corporate catering and the different events that you're running.
Well, I always do test runs, which is fun. You know, I get to eat the test run as well. And I do trials and tweak things. And I mean, we made an amazing breakfast burrito for the brunch club, and I did a few trial runs of that. Yeah, it's great to be able to put the passion and effort back into it.
And it sounds like you've really kept your close links with all the independent food producers and traders across Cambridge, is that?
Yeah, I think it's really important. It was definitely something that I spoke about when I had the cafe. People were quite shocked when I said that I don't think there's competition in the cafes in Cambridge. In my opinion, it was very much about working together, being one force as the independent. There were enough people to go around all of the independent cafes. You know, we're never going to do each other out of business. We just need to get the people out of Costa and Starbucks and Nero into the independents. So I think you shouldn't see it as a competition between the fellow independents. Everyone should work together, kind of keeping that networking up. And that's why it's been really nice helping. So just helping on the food trucks, seeing what other people are doing, seeing it from their perspective, as opposed to just being the customer, seeing it from working on it. and how hard they work and what goes behind. You know, you think, oh, they just pop up in a van, it's quite easy. It's not easy. There's a lot of work goes on behind the scenes, really busy shifts with a queue for miles. You know, it's, you see what goes into the food that you're eating.
So thank you, Joe Kaczynska. Afternoon teas here in your kitchen in Ely. This is Carrie Pavitt for Cambridge 105 Radio. It's always great to chat to food with Jo. She's got such a great sense of what works well in terms of ingredients, and then how can she adapt that into making different dishes.
And that music signals time for the latest food tweets from the city. So over to you, Carrie.
Yeah, the guys at Mill Road Butchers are getting very excited this week as they've started taking Christmas orders. So you can pop into the shop or call Cambridge 354 779 and let Mikey and Dan know what you want for Christmas.
And Gorilla Kitchen have tweeted, because they're not busy enough, they've got another extra outing today. And that's at Cambridge Blue Moon for the Indie Pop All Dayer. And they've got amazing vegan options. That's 5 through till 8:30. And another tweet from Cambridge Beer Fest. They've put up their beer list for the 2018 festival now online. 14th and 17th November, University Social Club, Mill Lane, Cambridge.
And finally, lots of people have been raving this morning about a new baker debuting at Ely Market. This is Luca, and he's serving up breakfast treats and a great variety of sourdoughs. So keep an eye out for him, because lots of people are quite excited.
Now back to Chestnuts. Here's Samira Effer, who's moved from Alimentum in Hills Road to the Box Tree in Ilkley just recently.
Chestnuts, I love chestnuts. I love them fresh more than anything else. So just peeling them down and just shaving them onto a dish. But I've used them...
What sort of thing would you shave them onto? What do they go well
with? It goes really well with meats. So things like venison, that's probably the thing that I would use most for it. But you can put them into things like stuffings. So meat stuffings you can put chestnuts into. But also you can use them in sweet things, so you can put them in, like, chestnut and chocolate is quite, it's quite classic. A lot of people do chestnut and chocolate cakes and logs and things at Christmas. To be fair, I don't really use them when they're not fresh, because I think they're just lovely fresh.
So you buy them sort of whole and...
Yeah, we buy them whole. Yeah, and then we have to peel them down. Normally ours come from France, but I mean, we only ever buy them towards the end of the year anyway. And that's the only time I would really use them, and that's probably when they're at the best.
Thanks to Samira Effer. And personally, I absolutely love chestnuts. The idea of pre-soaking them in wine before you bake them, which we heard about earlier, I'm going to try that.
Okay, so many popular pop food stalls at Cambridge Market, and one of them's an Hungarian one. Alan's been along to try them out, and he met some very knowledgeable customers.
Are you from Hungary?
Yes.
And is this good food here?
Oh, amazing.
What's the best thing in Hungarian food, would you say?
The fat and spices, I think.
Right, what sort of spices then?
Paprika. Pepper, mostly.
Onion.
So, and that makes it different from English food? I mean, some English dishes have paprika in and onion and
stuff. Yeah, but it's not the same.
The ingredients, I don't know actually.
Ingredients have more flavour in it.
Do they? Why do you think that is?
Because of the better climate we have in Hungary. It's more sunny, more warm.
Right, so that would affect things like the vegetables, the peppers and so on. Well, are they sweeter or...?
It just tastes like vegetables. I don't know, maybe it's just sometimes we just buy vegetables and it just doesn't taste, you know.
That was Petra, Female and Christian, and they were about to eat food prepared by Gabrielle. And here is Gabrielle explaining what's on the menu.
The menu is always the same, every day the same. It's a pork loin and a chicken which is roasted or grilled, and pepper as well, roasted pepper. And I add that pita bread, and the customer using self-service what they like, with piri-piri sauce, burger sauce, mayonnaise, stuff like this. With
so
the
they
steak.
Can add whatever sauces they want.
Exactly.
Right. And how's the meat marinated, is it?
I marinate the meat at night, always at night, and keep in the fridge. But I'm using mixed herbs, garlic, oregano, red paprika, oil and some stuff like this, and mix it up with the sunflower oil and leave it for a night. Yeah. And the next day serve the customer with the fresh meat, with the pepper and the pita bread, and add that stuff.
But what's the most popular, or are they all equally popular?
Couldn't let you know which is popular, because, for example, the last couple of days, chicken was extremely high interest, interesting about the people, but sometimes it's the same, pork and chicken. Sometimes, like last week, just pork. I cannot let you know.
Okay.
But usually I sold out everything every day, which is very nice, and I'm very happy. But I cannot guess which is the favorite in the day.
Yeah.
I'm on the market now 1 year. And more than 10 months, I sold a special Hungarian cake, which name is Chimney Cake, and the langos, which is a savory deep-fried bread with garlic, sour cream, cheese. It was extremely popular because it's traditional Hungarian food and just Hungarian people like. But people who came over, they saw the picture and they tried, they like it. But I really suffered. I work 7 days a week. I was really sick, really, really sick and tired, and I couldn't save. And I had a nice conversation with the council, and later on they let me change the menu because they saw that I'm working hard for almost nothing. And I suffer in winter time, heavy snowing, almost alone on the market. So they appreciate that I would like to do meat. And
you need a different license for doing meat.
Yes, have to. Even if I want to change the pepper, for example, because it's maybe smoky, and I want a salad, I have to get a permission to change everything. Even everything. It's nice because it's serious, but sometimes it's disadvantage. Sometimes it's an advantage for us.
Yeah.
But the meat is definitely much better than the previous menu, because I haven't had any question. What's this? Where this came from? How did that? Chicken, pork, next one, please. So it's much easier. Yeah, you can know this. Yeah.
And the peppers, are they an important ingredient in Hungarian cuisine?
Yes, peppers, it's mean in Hungarian language paprika, you know, hot paprika, which is the powdered paprika.
Yeah.
In Hungarian language, it's the same like this pepper. Pepper is paprika. So paprika is paprika. Because
so what we call just red and green peppers in Hungary is paprika.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is paprika, but in English in pepper.
Yeah.
And this originally came from Hungary.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
That's why I got a permission for Hungarian food. Because, you know, chicken is chicken everywhere in the world. Pork is pork. But this is traditional Hungarian. And because it's roasted, smell is lovely. People came very far from that. Where it came from, the smell, and we following the smell and we like it. So, yeah. This is the advantage. The disadvantage is because 90% content water is a little bit smoky.
Yeah.
And sometimes we are not happy with the neighbor because of the smell and the smoke. So, if I get permission, maybe I would like to change the pepper for salad or something dry things, which I don't need to roast it up.
Are you satisfied with the quality of pepper you're able to buy?
Yes, I am.
It's got the amount of flavour that you require.
Yes, definitely.
In Hungary, what do people eat for desserts? Are desserts big in Hungary?
It's not really popular, the dessert. The main menu in Hungary is a soup, the first. Uh-huh. Everybody eats soup every day. And the second menu is similar than like this like meat with the pasta or rice or pepper. And the third one is just dessert, but dessert could be anything.
Fruit,
ice cream,
Great. Well, thanks very much, Gabriel.
Thank you so much. Thank you. My pleasure.
And while he was there, Alan got to try the chicken dish that Gabriel was making, and he thought it was really good with some great depth of flavour.
So let's head back now to Chestnuts and our final look at some ideas, which this time come from Rosie Sykes.
I just think chestnuts are great. They're so versatile because they're lovely. They've got that incredible sweetness, so they go beautifully with chocolate. So I often do a chocolate and chestnut cake, a flourless one, because the chestnuts have that lovely kind of body for a cake. But also I do a sort of Christmas eaten mess where I crumble up chestnuts with meringue and cream and some brown sugar. That makes a really interesting pudding.
So you've cooked the chestnuts?
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is chestnuts, the best way to buy chestnuts, unless you have a lot of time on your hands, is peeled and cooked. So either vac-packed or the French sell them in tins. The French also sell the most delicious chestnut puree, which when I was a child, my mum used to make a pudding which was just chestnut, sweetened chestnut puree and cream, and we called it Greedy Grubs pudding. And it's absolutely delicious, but you can't eat very much of it. But if you want to go savoury, I make a lovely, which I was taught by one of my first bosses, Sean Hill, a really lovely soup, which is chestnut and pheasant, but you could do it with chicken as well. So make a very simple soup using a chicken stock. And again, the chestnut thickens really nicely, so you wouldn't need any other thickening. And then shred some chicken into the top of it. So it's a good way to use up leftover roast chicken or something.
Mm. And what, you'd use pureed chestnuts?
Yeah, or yeah. Use the whole peeled, cooked ones. Sauté off some onions, add the chestnuts, add maybe a bit of wine or sherry if you wanted, and then some chicken stock. Cook all that until the chestnuts are starting to fall apart. Give it a little puree and a season and shred some chicken into the top.
Oh, sounds good.
Lovely ideas, and I've made that pudding. It's called a Mont Blanc, in fact, because the cream on top makes it look a bit like a mountain. And I do a lovely chestnut soup as well with butternut squash and apple juice. Nice.
Right, well, it's time to open the drinks cabinet. We heard a few weeks ago a feature that Sue here did about Pinkster Gin and how they might be regarded as their waste materials to make other drinks. This issue of putting waste into good use has also found a nice solution over at Calverley's Brewery as well, on Hooper Street.
So one of my first interests in beer was when I was running a community garden in Clapton. We were blessed with many top breweries where we were collecting the waste from and turning that into compost. So when my brothers first started telling me about his idea to set up a brewery, I was like, cool, so what we can do with the waste? Mm. And so when we finally arrived at brewing, we got a cargo bike and mimicked what I was doing in London, using cycle power to take the waste from the brewery to the allotment and managing to achieve the best compost because it's full of nitrogen and nutrients for plants. And you can grow big and healthy vegetables to enjoy. So it's giving second life to the waste. So that is basically something we do every brew day, cycled up to the New Street allotments, where it's benefiting many gardeners and chickens as well.
We had, for the odd occasion, sent our grain off to a buffalo farm. I suppose it's a great way to reuse something, you know, which is otherwise expensive for the farmer, which is kind of a bit topical at the moment. I suppose we wouldn't want to be part of the scaremongering and say grain shortages that's going beyond the UK, which could well affect the UK because, well, we do export and, you know, obviously people are going to be keen if they're short in their country to export some more of our malt, should I say, because there's a lot of it does go out elsewhere because it's highly regarded. Mm. I mean, at the minute, there's been a lot of scaremongering, I guess, in the press, examples of beers going up 300%. But to be honest, we've tried, for example, some of our organic beers. The malt has been twice or triple the price of normal malt, and we've managed to absorb that cost. So at the minute, I'm not hugely worried. I just think it really just affects macro breweries that just produce huge volumes, and the sale price is very closely related to the actual price of the malt because they're selling it with such tiny margins and in such mass volume. If there is a bit of a shortage, I guess, on malt, then maybe we'll end up with some more kind of arrangements with local farmers rather than the allotment.
It's an interesting subject, and it's just one that got me thinking, what's the volume of the ingredients that you get through here? You know, you mentioned that you could be taking up to a ton of malt. Does that last you a week here at Calverley's?
A ton is maybe like 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Yeah. It fluctuates, depends how strong the beers I'm brewing. Mm. Depends what my mood is, I guess.
Is that kind of what determines what you have on offer week to week?
The mood.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. We're led by the mood and the desires of me and Sam, what kind of beers we want to drink. At the moment, we've both been interested in more delicate beers, so we've been brewing more lagers. Mm. So beers that say, you know, I still love my New England IPAs and all the hot bombs, but I'm looking for maybe what you might call a more nuanced beer. But that's part of the joy of what we're doing. It's a very human-led experience. The night before, in the shower, I'm like, oh, what would I do if I tweak that or added that? What if I threw a bunch of lemon balm in just at 5 minutes of the boil? And then I get to try it out the next day.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks later, enjoy the pleasure of the experimental process.
And before I go, I must say, you guys have been in the media a lot because you've been winning awards.
The only award we've won is that my mum says we're really good.
The one that counts.
Yeah, that's the only one. But we also said that we're the top 30 drinking establishments in the UK.
There was a book release.
Yeah, by the lesser-known brother of Michela. So he runs a brewery called Evil Twin in New York. Mm-hmm. With Phaidon Publishing, he compiled a book of best place to drink beer in the world.
Whittled down to 30 places in the UK, and that was us.
You know, if someone's appreciating what you're doing through your hard work and love, that only makes those late nights and early mornings even more beautiful. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Wow, that was Sam and Tom of Calverley's Brewery and dealing with their waste partly via allotments. And there's several allotment fields dotted around the city, and this includes the community gardens where anyone can go along and help.
Yes, well, one such is the Empty Common Community Garden, which is off Brooklands Avenue, where they're very keen on recycling and permaculture. And you can find out more about an initiative like this if you look online at a website called transitioncambridge.org.
Okay, and here's Matt with news about how you can find free food available in Cambridge, looking at the Olio app.
Yes, the Olio app is free to download on iOS and Android, and it's free food for everyone, really. Now, just having a quick look at what's available, Eleanor has just posted in the last 20 minutes an ad for free Nesquik powder. Strawberry and banana, two banana Nesquiks, one strawberry, available anytime for collection. Eleanor is based near Cambridge Junction. And there is still some organic fair trade Nespresso coffee pods available near the Big Tesco on Newmarket Road. That's available for pickup on Thursdays only. And Ada, who lives near St John's Chop House and the Punter Pub, is offering a 500-gram bag of carrots, available for pickup during the week. Now, these are just a few examples. There are plenty more on offer, especially during the weekdays, usually including stacks of pre-made sandwiches and baguettes, surplus and donated by sandwich shops. So do give Olio a try. It's free, and it's free food. And there are some really great things on there quite often. Opinion has been favouring Greek wines lately, and there are quite a few articles about it in the press. Its somewhat bawdy reputation throughout the 80s and 90s is being quietly swept away by a fresh appreciation. Sam Owens over at Thirsty on Chesterton Road, for instance, he's included Retsina as part of his revamp of their wine selection. And this is something that we mentioned in the news section of our last episode. So, we took a trip to the Cambridge Wine Merchants on Cherry Hinton Road, where wine specialist Alice Archer was on hand to tell the story of Greek wine.
Greek wine is seeing quite a big resurgence at the moment. Greeks are a major part, if not the major part, of modern-day wine culture, as they are a major part in most European culture. Wine growing began maybe 6,000 or more years ago. However, despite Greek economy or whatever, Greek wine is now having a resurgence. Emerging regions are very popular in the wine world and also with young, enthusiastic wine drinkers. They want to find wines from new areas, from this, like, well, we say new areas, actually they're incredibly traditional, but Slovenia, Georgia, Sardinia, Turkey and Greece all becoming very popular. Greek wine history maybe went through a bit of a negative period in the 70s, 80s. Lots of Retsina, for those who don't remember it, is a white wine. It's made exactly the same way as a normal white wine. It's made from a grape variety usually called Savatino. But they add chunks of pine resin during the aging process. It's a bit like expecting to have a large glass of white wine and ending up with a dry Fino sherry or something like that and having quite a sort of shock to your, because you've got this kind of resiny, piney note going on. It's not a fruity, grapey thing. It's very much secondary tastes and aromas. There were a lot of poor quality wines being exported, and I think that was what Greek wine was all known for. That and sweet muscats, sweet sickly muscats, or Mavrodaphne, which is their kind of port-style thick sweet red wine. But it's all changing, yeah?
It's not because Greece didn't have the right environment or the right land or anything.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, it's not. I think they exported stuff that was popular locally. Mm-hmm. But the Greeks have always made dry wines, just not quite on the scale they are doing it now. So sort of Retsina is quite a traditional drink, and so that was their stamp, their hallmark. Whereas actually doing similar things to everyone else works quite well. But they've got a wealth of indigenous grape varieties as well. Maybe about 300 or so grape varieties. Stuff that has been growing there for maybe 2,000, 3,000 years. And so white wine is in a lot of ancient literature. And they planted many vines. Yeah, so white wine has always been there in Greece. The Greeks then took vines to Italy. After the Romans became the major power in Italy, they took vines to Gaul, some to Britain, some to Germany. So that is how modern European vines spread. As of 2013, there are only about 100,000 hectares of vines. But half of that is for table grapes and for drying grapes. So they've got a big culture of producing eating grapes and raisins, etc., which are completely different to the grapes that we make wine from. Mm. They have a sweeter profile, a more palatable instant profile, and they're different varieties, and they're also, some of them, genetically bred to be seedless, etc.
That'll explain why my Sultana wine never really took off.
Never really took off. Sadly not, sadly not. So, two whites and two reds that I think you should probably look out for. Mm. The first white is Moscow Filero, and this is a particularly aromatic style. It tends to be light, young, not influenced by oak. It particularly comes from a region called Mantinea in the Peloponnese, so down to southern Greece. And it's, as I say, it's particularly aromatic, floral, sort of rose petal, violet kind of aromas, a little bit grapey as well. It does have some aspects of that, but it's not sweet. Supermarkets like Marks and Spencer's have actually been very good at bringing along a few more Greek grape varieties and also other emerging region grain varieties. As I said, they do blend Moscow Filero sometimes with Chardonnay. Personally, I'm a big believer in leaving native grape varieties to do their own thing. You know, Chardonnays, Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrahs, they've all made their mark, but in a French way, and I feel like when the Greeks or the Turkish grow these grape varieties, they're trying to recreate something as opposed to just be their own wine, be their own person. I far prefer wines that I've tried that are just native grape varieties because it allows the characters of that variety to shine through, as opposed to if you blend one of the reds, for example, with Syrah, what you're really getting is Syrah and then just a tiny bit extra. And I don't think they're necessarily always complimentary. I think maybe it's a market fear. Maybe they think that people... It's true, if you see a grape variety that you know, you're more likely to buy it, I suspect, than if you haven't got a clue what it is. And, you know, Moscow Filero, is it the grape variety? Is it the town that it comes from? Is it the name of the wine? Who knows? So maybe it's partly that. But, yeah, not quite having enough confidence to think that this shines through by itself. Yeah. Another white wine to look out for, something called Assyrtiko from the island of Santorini. And Assyrtiko, I think, was really what led the resurgence of Greek wine in the last 10 years or so. Assyrtiko from Santorini became terribly fashionable. It's been reviewed by a number of excellent critics. It's a dry style. It's almost somewhere between an Albarino from Spain, from Galicia, and maybe a more kind of Chablis-like thing. It's got a lot of minerality behind it. It's got a bit of a saline tang. So yeah, maybe somewhere between Albarino and some styles of Chardonnay. It's quite high acidity. It does get quite alcoholic, but that's because it is very hot in Greece, particularly down south, Santorini. Most of the vineyards are on the north of the island, so you haven't got big North African hot winds coming up. Yeah, it does get quite alcoholic, so slightly more heady grape variety, but I got some good citrusy fruit flavours as well, and works very well with wild yeasts and also with some oak ageing. Red wines. The two to look out for are Agiotico. It's A-G-I-O-R-T-I-K-O, and that's from Nemea, which is the northeastern Peloponnese.
I think I've heard of that because you studied the classics, didn't you?
Yeah.
I studied the classics as well, specifically Asterix and the Olympic Games.
Yes, important.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, and actually, it can be quite light. It's probably the most commercially produced red wine that there is from Greece, coming out of Greece. Lots of red berry fruit, stuff like that. Sometimes it's compared to a Sangiovese from Tuscany area, but it can also have a nice bit of age as well, richer and more robust. But if you really want something rich from Greece, then you want to go for Xinomavro, which is spelled X-I-N-O-M-A-V-R-O.
Xinomavro.
This is actually grown all over Greece, but particularly in Naousa, northern Greece, actually. The name translates as acid black. So Mavro is black, Xino is acid. It's a very dark grape variety with reasonably high natural acidity. So again, it can get quite alcoholic.
Yes.
It's quite fierce to drink when young. And so if possible, do try and look out for stuff that's a little bit older. You know, maybe look out for stuff that's from 2012. And by and large, they do age them in barrels for a while in the cellars in Greece. Mm. And it is delicious wine, particularly if you have got a big leg of lamb or something like that with some Greek-style sides to go with it. Imagine where it works. So, as I said, I do encourage more people to adventure out and try Greek wines. So if you see any of those four grape varieties, hopefully you'll now recognise them and pick them up. And yeah, many, many supermarkets now branching out a bit. There will be more Greek wine flowing. And it's not all Retsina.
Many thanks to Alice Archer of the Cambridge Wine Merchants. Perhaps the tide is turning in favour of Greek wines nowadays.
There's Green Onions signalling the start of our news section, and we begin with jobs.
Don Pasquale in Cambridge's Market Square needs staff. Experience is preferred, but full training will be provided, as will excellent rates of pay. Pop in for an informal chat or email your CV to info@donpasquale.co.uk.
The ever-busy Fitzbillies has several positions available. The Trumpington Street branch is after a waiter-waitress. If you're interested, send your CV by email to miriam@manager@fitzbillies.com. While over at the Bridge Street branch, they're looking for a barista counter server. And this time, email terry@fitzbs@icloud.com. And then finally, their bakery up at North Cambridge is looking for a baker and also an early morning bakery assistant. For either position, send your CV by email to scott@bread@fitzbillies.com.
A chef de partie is needed at Parker's Tavern in Regent Street. They're paying a competitive salary. You'll work 42.5 hours a week with straight shifts and 2 days off a week as well. Benefits include a meal on duty, a pension scheme, 28 days paid leave, ongoing training and development, and staff discounts in-house and with local companies. If you'd like more details on that, just phone Cambridge 606 582.
And there are two full-time jobs at Little Seoul Korean restaurant in Regent Street. They need a sous chef, and training will be given if you're not familiar with Korean cuisine. Plus, they need a kitchen assistant for general washing up duties. To apply, email your CV to Little Seoul, S-E-O-U-L, at hotmail.com or phone Ju on 07796 260 276. Or you can pop into the restaurant at 108 Regent Street, Cambridge.
And if you apply for one of these jobs, good luck. And please mention that you heard about it here on Flavour at Cambridge 105 Radio.
There's an Italian wine fair on today. It's run by Cambridge Wine Merchants and is at the University Centre in Granter Place, next to Mill Pub in Mill Lane. £7.50 entry, which gets you a cheese platter or a meat platter. Classic Italian wines are all there, some very high quality, lesser known wines as well. It's from 3 till 6 p.m. today.
Alex Rushmer and Lawrence Butler, Will Lowe and Lucy Lowe's two-week winter botanical pop-up starts on the 27th of November at 7 p.m. There are still places left for some nights, and book via Eventbrite. Tickets are £76.05, including the booking fee. It's at Cambridge Distillery in High Street, Grantchester.
And finally, here's news of a big Christmas wine and food fair in Ely. It's at the Maltings, which is just a few minutes from the station. There are 140 different products to sample, including wine, spirits and cheese, the cheese being from Humchosen. So you can try before you buy or booze before you choose. Tickets are £20, available from elywineevents.co.uk/booking.
And there's the show theme, Calling Time, on this latest episode of Flavour. We will be back in 2 weeks' time. We'll be repeated tomorrow and podcast the following week.
Coming up next on Cambridge 105 Radio this afternoon is Bookmark, presented by Lee Chambers, talking amongst others to novelist, broadcaster and journalist Anne Atkins about her new novel, An Elegant Solution.
Community Focus is at 3 p.m. with news of the Cambridge Summit for Homelessness and Winter Comfort's Winter Appeal.
And jumping ahead to this evening at 6, we have Chris Brown's Soul and Dance Show. There's also Centuries of Sound follows at 8, and Paul Cristoforo with Rock of Ages at 9 p.m. But that is all from us. We will be back on the 24th of November. So until then,
goodbye.